And now for Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the northern Susitna Valley, created by your friends and neighbors at Pothole Productions and Talkeetna Community Radio. You are listening to KTNA Talkeetna. From comic relief to serious beliefs, each week brings you a fresh nugget. I'm Carol, and tonight's show is focusing on trapping then and now. And I have a guest here with me, Tim Beakley. He's a trapper. And we're going to start out with some, get an idea of what a trapper is and what they do and what they used to do. So, Tim, how you doing?
Good, good.
All right. Well, how did trapping begin in this area?
Well, as a subsistence measure, the indigenous people would have used trapping purely for subsistence and until the arrival of the white men. And when the whites got into the area, we brought in the outside market, or another reason for harvesting fur. And in the whites themselves came to trap. I mean, this is okay. Fur rich country, and the white folks that showed up, they came to mine, they came to build roads, they came to settle the area, but trapping was the mainstay. And it was the off-season work that road builders, railroad builders, pilots, a lot of the stuff that I read, in the off-season, you hear about, I'll say a pilot, what they didn't do when they were flying is they were trapping, or the miners, when they couldn't mine, they were trapping.
Okay. And, what about the indigenous peoples? It was a subsistence thing, but it wasn't something they did all the time. It was just one of the things they did.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, hunting,
survival. Depending on season.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was seasonal. They, hunting was a way of procuring food, in skins and so on, and trapping was the same way. And then there was fishing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do people still trap today?
Oh yes, very much so. It's a popular. It's pursued as a business by some people. It's pursued as a sport by others. It's a great fall and winter activity. And spring, there's beaver and muskrat trapping takes place primarily in the spring. And it's a, at different levels, some people trap only in the available time they have. Other people live a whole trapping lifestyle.
What about a subsistence level not related to the indigenous people? I'm sure there's people that live up the tracks or way out there someplace, and that's part of their way of life.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And you can still read books about it today. There's people in the interior that have lived, they've been living
off the land, so to speak.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay, so what is trapping? What does it entail?
A love for the outdoors, a lot of energy. It's the time to harvest fur is in the winter, the late fall, winter, and spring. Of course, it's our harshest conditions in the state of Alaska, and so it takes someone with endurance, and you really have to have a desire to want to be out in the environment during time. It's a beautiful time to be out, is from my point of view, point of view. And then knowledge of the animals that they're pursuing, they have to know the equipment available, the methods for taking them, the environment, the environment that they live in, where to find the animals, what their travel patterns are, and how they change through the season.
So you just don't walk out there and make a snare and wait?
No.
Okay,
no,
there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, you have to... you have to have some knowledge of the animals.
So you got to know the footprints
and their habits, what their eating habits are, what their travel habits are, and that varies through the course of a season. I find animals in different locations during different parts of the season, knowledge, courtesy. Obviously, we're sharing that the environment with other winter activity people, and so it takes a level of courtesy and willingness to get along with other people that want to use the same area. I've personally had experiences with some of the dog mushers and stuff in the area, and I have good relationships with them. I understand their needs and their usage, and
so they respect each other.
Yeah, and it's mutual respect, I guess, is that's what it would require.
Well, what kind of animals can be trapped in this Susitna Valley?
Well, just about everything. There's animals up here that they don't have in the lower 48, but beaver, otter, mink, that's river otter, not sea otter, muskrat, fox, coyote, wolf, lynx, wolverine, marten, and weasel. in depending, you know, you'll find certain trappers that only target one or two species. That's what they spend
their
time.
What's most popular?
Martin. Well, it always depends on whatever's in fashion. You know, whatever the market is.
Or I guess what's available. I know a couple years ago I was listening, and they said, well, it just wasn't a good season for Martin.
Right. Yeah. Weather conditions change. Just like this year, beaver trapping for me was a bust. I didn't have as much time to pursue it. And when I got back from Kodiak, there was 3 foot of ice, and I just wasn't excited about chopping through all that ice. Hopefully here in April I'll get a chance. Depends. The market's been really strong for river otter and Martin the last few years. Beaver prices are starting to come back. That's what motivates most of the trappers. Some people just use the skins themselves. They get them tanned and make their own garments and sell them that way, or do craft work with them and so on. A well-rounded trapper pursues all of the animals available on his trap line. There's a certain balance. This is my feelings anyway. There's a certain balance that I want to keep in my trap line. I don't want to wipe everything out, but I don't want to I don't want to ignore a species either. I don't want one species to take dominance over another. It's not so much a problem here in this area. When I trapped back in Michigan, the population densities were incredible. You could trap almost every one of these species in one farm. You know, that's how densely populated. This country here is a lot
more
sparse. More spread out. And you do find congregations of animals around certain types of habitat. Beaver ponds, are good attractors for a variety of species. That gives you the number and the types of animals that are trapped here.
Okay, so what is it? What's it like in the day of a trapper?
It varies. It depends on the trapper and what their level of pursuit is. Sayin, who lives the trapping lifestyle, they live in the bush, and they'll have miles and miles of trap lines to cover in order to check them, and they'll have them go in a couple different directions, and they'll alternate their course, and they usually will have line cabins or camps in between so that they're
How often do they have to check them?
It depends on the animals and so on. And the types of traps being used. Generally, a week, in between runs, if the weather is cold. See, one of the things a trapper has to be careful of is spoilage of the fur. They don't want to have trapped an animal and then have it spoil. And that's why we hate to see these warm winds and so on show up in the middle of January. but as often as possible, generally, so on a long liner, somebody who's going to go out and hit two or three of their cabins in their big circle or their big run, they may be gone a week. And so it's up early in the morning, get your gear together. They got to be thinking about food and safety and conditions. You don't know what you're going to run into as far as overflowing rivers or lakes. And if it's warm, the snow is wet and heavy, or if it's cold and blowing, you lose your trail. There's a lot of factors that will affect it. Another type of method of trapping, the people who use the highway system, they'll drive to a point with their snow machine, offload the snow machine, then run a line, a big circle or a loop off the highway. So they'll got to get up early in the morning because they may drive if they live in the more metropolitan areas. They're going to drive 2 hours just to get out to where they got to go, then start running their line.
So is that like the hobbyist or?
Yeah, well, there's some serious trappers that cover that kind of ground. I mean, that's what they spend all of their time doing.
Are they like in it for the profit?
Yeah, well, we all look at it.
Or the self-use.
Yeah, we all look at it from that point of view. We at least want to make expenses. When you're driving 2 hours every other day or every couple of days to go check traps, then you're running the snow machine as well. You're burning quite a bit of gasoline at the prices now.
Exactly.
We like to make ends meet. For a lot of people, it supplements their income. They have jobs elsewhere or seasonal jobs. I mean, it's still the seasonal workers will trap in their off season if their off season happens to be the winter. So, and then like myself, my day varies. If I'm using the airplane to access my trapping area, then I got to get up early to warm the airplane, preheat it, and then weather conditions will dictate whether I do go or don't go. And then there's opportunities where I use a snow machine, and that makes
so
it a little
bit
easier on me.
You can trap in some more remote place if you got an airplane.
Right. Oh, yeah, that helps to get it. It's a lot quicker way to get to those areas. However, you're limited on once you land at a spot, then the rest of it you do on snowshoes. So there's advantages and disadvantages. It does get into areas that are You know, and that's kind of what I, it's important to me, is there's enough people working the river systems and the road systems now that I don't want to compete with them, so I get out, try to get out farther away into a different area and a different population. So my day varies, and you know, I know that I got some guys, some friends of mine, that get up and they go to the Latitude for a cup of coffee and get bits for a while and think about what they're going to do, get all primed up, and then run and get some oil and spark plugs for the machine, and get back to their machine, get that done, and lay down and take a nap, and get back up, and well, heck, it's time to go to Latitude for dinner, so they go to Latitude for dinner, and well, then the day's done, it's dark, and they don't ever get out to set any traps.
So do they ever? Maybe one of those days will come where they decide, I'm really going to do this today.
It does. I'm just making fun of a couple of friends of mine is all. No, most of the people that are pursuing it are serious about it. Serious enough that they'll get up early in the morning, work late at night. Because once you've come in, if you've, you know, then you've got to skin your catch and you've got to handle the fur. And
so that has to be done kind of right away.
Yeah, it does. If the animals need to be thawed, you get a day's reprieve. But you got to fit it into your schedule. You know, you can freeze it. You can leave things frozen and handle them at a separate time. But it generally is important to get the fur put up, especially if you want to get it to market. If you want to get it to the auction, you got to get it put up.
So it makes for a long day.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right, let me stop 1 minute and remind everybody that you're listening to Nuggets, our new show, and it's a locally produced program, and my name is Carol. I'm hosting this week, and my guest is Tim Beakley, and we're talking about trapping. All right, go ahead, Tim. Where were you?
Well, we were talking about discussing the day in the life of a trapper, and I was telling you pretty much giving an idea of the variation between different lifestyles of trapping, whether they're living in the bush and pursuing it 100% of the time, or whether they're working part-time, or they're in the off-season, and different trappers pursue it at different levels.
I have one question when you're talking about the person. It's living out in the bush and doing it as a subsistence level. Mm-hmm. How long might their trap line be?
It varies. It can be hundreds of miles, you know.
Or 20 miles or whatever, it depends. But what's in that area.
Yep.
And they might make the loop and then start over and make the loop again.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Or they'll go in different directions and have different cabins. I like reading some of the old diaries that are being published in the Alaska Trappers Association magazines of some of the old-time trappers out in Machumina and places like that, reading their daily trampings, and you know, when things aren't going well and the snow is bad. A lot of those guys use dog teams too, by the way.
Oh yeah.
And there's still people that trap with dog teams.
Oh, but see, now you got GPS and you got your cell phone, and so anything goes down, you can really get the help. Back then they didn't have all that.
Right. And there's still a lot of people that pursue it the old-fashioned way. And that's I find a lot of respect in that. I think it's an envious lifestyle myself. I can never quite break away from technology to get out there and do it myself. It's got its hooks in me. Not that I want it, but it's I can't deny it.
Are there some people that just trap like a couple weeks out of the year as opposed to a couple of months?
Sure, yeah. And there was a time in Michigan when that's what I did, because it's the only time I had off during the holidays or whatever. I'd squeeze in whatever time I could, and I'm sure there's people that you know, fit it in whenever they have time off from their work.
Well, how long is the trapping season?
Different species run for different lengths of time.
Oh.
Things generally get started here in that second week in November, in the fall. There's some beaver season. We're in a unique situation here where we're perched right in the corner of three different game management units, and so they have different seasons in the different units. Especially
for what's required.
13 and 14. Yeah, well, Fish and Game has got seasons designed around the habitat and.
So they tell you when you can trap and where you can trap.
Yep, exactly.
And you just get the book and you look, make sure you're within those.
Yep. It's very extensively regulated and well. It's regulated well. I'm not. Management is important with our resources. All resources, regardless of whether it's the fur animals or big game animals or anything, or minerals or timber. It's all needs to be managed.
Well, I'm sure the game people probably are more common sense type issues.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
It's kind of laying out what's a lot of it's good for the environment, sort of.
Yeah, a lot of it's based on biology. You know, biology is the most important. That's the most common sense way of managing animals. There's interaction between other users of the habitat that they have to address, but that's not primarily it's biological.
Okay, so say it starts in November, mm-hmm. and then maybe different species might be some start in January or whatever.
Right. Well, they pretty much all the major species start. Beaver starts a little bit early. There's some early season in 13. It starts in near the end of September, but that's not a good time to trap. The fur's not prime at that point in time.
Okay, so that's another factor I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the part of the biological part that fish and game, they understand that fur needs to be managed. So the different species run different times. Some of the seasons are shorter. Wolverine's shorter. That ends December 31st.
And why would... can only get so many, or
well, no. There's,
has it got to do with their reproduction cycle?
I think it's more biological. I'm not a biologist myself. I don't know all of the biological facts, but I believe that it has a lot to do with that.
Okay. Well, what about Martin?
Martin runs longer. That runs in Unit 13 to the end of February. And again, it's different species. They've set the...
So the earliest you could start is September with the beaver, or October, whenever that is.
Right.
And then the latest?
Beaver finishes in May 15th in Unit 13. I think it was Unit 14. I think 13 runs even a little bit longer, maybe June 1st.
And then when does Martin end?
Martin ends in February, end of February.
End of February.
Yeah. And then the otter, mink, they'd all drop off at different times. And you have to keep a copy of the management.
Get the book every year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, because they do change those. They just recently lengthened the season in 13 for Martin here a few years back. And a lot of it had to do with accessibility to the area. A lot of trappers couldn't get to their prime Martin trapping grounds until later in the season. It was difficult.
Because maybe they had to go by snow machine or whatever reason.
Yeah, because it's pretty remote country that you're going to find those animals, and they're not going to be in populated areas.
Do you have to have a license?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Is it like a fishing license?
Yeah, it's called a fur harvester's license, and you can buy it in combination with some of the other licenses.
Like fishing, hunting.
Yeah, that you can buy a combination license, resident combination license. I think there's a non-resident license, too.
But I'm sure they got expensive. A subsistence license
for the
same thing.
Right, the subsistence
just
license.
Like the fishing and the hunting.
Includes the fishing, hunting, and so on, yeah.
And then when you get that license, then you have to abide by all those rules. And if the fishing mm-hmm. game comes out, you got to show your license, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep.
So you got to carry it on your person.
Yep. And there are sealing requirements for certain species. They want you to bring them in to be sealed.
What do you mean by sealed?
It's a little tag that they would put on the fur and they need to document it. They do some biological measurements and so on.
For their own statistical purposes.
Right, right. And some species don't require it. Others do. Beaver require it. Otter require it. Wolverine, wolf. They have to be tagged. And it records for them the animal, where it was taken. There's quite a bit of information, how it was taken and so on and when.
Now, what other requirements as far as what the government requires you to do? Do you have to turn in any part of any animal or...
Not with the first species as far as I know. I've not trapped lynx. And I don't know if there's a requirement on the skull and the lynx, but I don't think there is.
Okay, because I know when you're hunting that the moose and the requirements for that. So.
Right.
But they don't have anything like that with trapping that you know of?
No. There is voluntary. They do ask for voluntary. Like a lot of times with Martin populations, they'll ask for Martin skulls to do their biological data gathering that way.
Well, why do people trap today? For the meat, or
for a variety of reasons, and there's primarily for fur.
But at the subsistence level, it's for their, you know, meat or whatever, and the furs they can use to make their clothes.
Right,
and then you go all the way up to the ones that are for profit. Maybe they use the furs themselves or sell them.
Yeah, the subsistence level at this point, they use fur, but a lot of it, they're subsisting off of, but they're selling that to the raw fur market for fashion.
Do that too.
Sure. I mean, I don't. There's
just like in the old West, they did that. Mm-hmm. As they moved across the country and they trap and they.
Yep.
And that's how they came up with the Ferrandi and all, because everybody would meet mm-hmm. at the end of the season and sell all their furs and get drunk and spend it on women and then go back out and do it all over again.
Yep. They'd be rich for about a week, then they'd be broke again.
Okay. So is it a lucrative business, or are you breaking even, like you said earlier? But
generally, in my case, in the small trappers, no. It's more enjoyment than anything else, being out there practicing the age-old sport or age-old activity. There are people that can make a living at it. In this state, there's quite a few people that do.
But mostly it's not for totally making a living. People have other interests, other jobs, other whatever.
Yeah, it depends on how you want to live. If you live a real non-consumptive lifestyle, I think a person could live off it. My first year here, I lived off trapping beaver.
There you go.
I didn't live well, but I lived off trapping beaver.
I want to mention again that this is Nuggets Show, and my name is Carol. I'm the host, and our guest today is Tim Beakley. And we're discussing trapping. All right, where were we, Tim?
You ask if trapping was lucrative as a business, and for some people they do. They make it. They can make a living at it. Most of us trappers don't. It's either a seasonal part of our income, or at the very least, it's a sport. Activity for young people.
So say, for example, you were talking about why it came about a long, long time ago. So today, maybe there are quite a few pilots that maybe trap off-season when they're not flying around tourists or whatever it is they do in the off months.
Yeah, that's not the higher number. I've known of a couple instances of pilots that did that. There's almost not an off season for flying anymore.
Well, that's true.
But I've read quite a bit about the people that came here early. They'd have seasonal jobs. They'd be mining, and then they would, when they couldn't be at the mines, they had to do something, and trapping was an activity that they could pursue. They were used to being out in the bush and being away and being alone, which is, some guys can't go out unless they have a partner, but there's a lot of guys that and women, there's ladies that trap too.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah,
gotta be Alaskan women though. Well, what about trapping and the environmental impact? How does it affect the wildlife population?
It's a great management tool. It's probably one of the most effective management tools for purposely managing a specific population. If it's practiced properly, a trapper wants to manage his trap lines. He doesn't want to over-harvest. He doesn't want to, in which case he won't make a serious impact on the wildlife population. I mean, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. You want to be able to...
Well, I was reading something about the way the natives, a long time ago and for thousands of years, the way they would go about it. It was... They knew exactly when to put traps in certain places and when to stop and when to go to another one. In order to make the environment balanced.
Right. Yeah. You want to try and maintain a stable population in your area. Otherwise you'll ruin your own activity.
Well, it'll change the food chain, because predator prey and so if something's missing, then something else comes in, or vice versa, whatever.
Yeah, and that comes into play. One of the things that I see, kind of more importantly, is Mother Nature has some cycles too. The rabbit or the snowshoe hare cycle. A lot of animals are very sensitive to that, specifically the lynx and the fox.
Well, what about like the snowshoe hare? Is that something popular to trap?
Yeah, that was one of the indigenous people trapped them a lot for food purposes, and also because of the skins, the native women would make what they called a rabbit rope, and then they could weave or sew that into these rabbit blankets and so on. And
I read a book, and it told all about how the women
things. And they were relatively easy to trap, so that when there were high hare populations, that was a good way of obtaining the fur and the meat. The other thing is they'll go into wild cycles, where they'll crash. The cycle will crash and the population gets too high, either disease or starvation. In the case of rabbits, I don't, again, I'm not a biologist, but I don't believe starvation was a problem because there's plenty of area for them to move to. But when you got a high population and then an infection becomes, gets into a local population, it could wipe them out quickly because of the frequency of contact between animals. I'm starting to notice quite a few more since I've been living here, increase in population in the rabbits.
So when you say living here, I failed to say it originally. You're the Talkeetna area.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we've got a couple more minutes left.
Okay.
Are there any of the animals on an endangered species list or threatened that we normally trap here in Susitna Valley?
No, there's the fur animals. The populations are still very healthy, you know, the traditional animals to trap. And I don't have much experience around the marine environment. And, you know, of course, the sea otter is not being trapped now. And that was exploited 200 years ago. And so that would be the only one, I guess, that you could say would fall in that area. All of the common species are still very healthy populations. It varies from region to region. Some areas have more of one species than another. And that'll be reflected in fish and game bag limits. You'll see some areas where there's no limit on marten and some areas where there's a limit where you can only take a dozen or 20 or
And eight. Then the reason would be because of the population?
Right.
Or the habitat?
Yeah. Historically, they will have evaluated what the habitat will support, how much usage there is. You know, maybe there's a high population of trappers. You know, there's a lot of trappers in that area.
And so as part of that statistical information that they were gathering helps them make these decisions.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
All right. Can you think of anything else that you want to add to this? We got a minute or two left.
No, other than that, I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. I just know that I didn't know all that much about trapping, and I knew it was happening out there, but, you know, so I thought maybe other people in the valley would like to know kind of what it's all about, you know, so that they don't have this abstract mystery in their mind.
Yeah, it's a age-old activity that I like to see kept going. It's healthy. It's a great way to exercise and get out and enjoy the environment. There's quite a few young people that I've gotten to know through the, you know, through the interest in trapping, and it's fun to watch them grow and learn. It's a great way to get them out in the winter rather than having them play Xbox.
I know what I wanted to ask you. So where do you sell your furs?
There's a couple local fur buyers in Fairbanks, and then there's a couple different big auction houses that you can open accounts with, and that's North American Fur Auctions. This is the company that I'm associated with, and they have agents all around the country, and then there's an agent here in Wasilla.
So they come look at your stuff, or
well,
you bring it to them?
We bring it to them, and then they'll tag it, and then they ship it all off. And there's North American has four auctions a year, and they promote right to the fashion industry. They actually get out and help the fashion industry
To find the products they need.
Exactly. Well, to develop uses for it, too, you know.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, Tim. I appreciate you coming on the show. And you've been listening to Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the northern Susitna Valley. Do you have a nugget you'd like to share? If you would like to host a show, be a guest on this program, or get involved in some other way, please call the station at 733-1700. You may also contact us through the website at ktna.org. Next week's host will be Holly Stinson, focusing on micro-neighborhoods, beginning with Mile 7, Question Lake, Birch Creek area. Thank you.